From the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Cromery. Thank you for tuning in. Juneau is getting a new public use cabin, this time built by a local trail maintenance nonprofit. Megan Tabachek leads Trail Mix Incorporated, which builds and maintains trails around Juneau. This will be Trail Mix's first time building a cabin.
So I'm really excited because not only are we going to build a beautiful cabin that, you know, generations of Juneau people can use for years and years to come, but we're also setting up trail workers who hopefully can keep those skills in the Juneau community or wherever they take off to afterwards.
The cabin will be owned and maintained by the city. The Juneau Assembly approved a grant to the nonprofit last month to take on the project. The money was approved by voters in 2022 in a bond package. The cabin will be at Amalgam Meadows Park, about a mile out the road from the Shrine of St. Therese. The new cabin will be a short hike beyond the existing Amalgam cabin. Tabachek says that Trail Mix staff will build the trail to the new cabin this summer. Next summer, they'll build the cabin itself under the guidance of an experienced foreman who's built public use cabins before.
The second cabin is going to look almost spitting image of the first Amalgam cabin, except a couple improvements I'm excited about is we're getting a longer roof over the deck, which, you know, necessary for Juneau. Now you can actually hang out on the deck even if it's rainy.
This will be the second city-owned cabin in the Juneau area. There are about a dozen Forest Service and state-owned cabins. The largest timber companies operating in Southeast Alaska want the Tongass National Forest to sell them more old-growth timber, and they're suing the federal government to get it. The Department of Justice asked the court to throw out the case in May. KTOO's Alex Solomon reports.
The Alaska Forest Association, along with two of its members, Viking Lumber and Alcan Timber, filed a lawsuit in March, alleging that the U.S. Department of Agriculture failed to fulfill a promise to supply the companies with enough timber to meet market demand. But the government filed a motion to dismiss the case, saying it didn't promise that. The case comes after President Trump issued two executive orders aimed at expanding logging in the Tongass this March, and follows decades of legal disputes over Tongass timber. Frank Garrison is the timber industry's attorney. He says that the industry has faced a 30-year decline and that Viking and Alcan are struggling.
They're on the brink of collapse.
He says the companies rely almost completely on old-growth timber offered by the Tongass National Forest. The government argues in the motion that it is only required to seek to provide enough timber to meet market demand while balancing other forest uses and ensuring their sustainability. In other words, the DOJ says the agency is not legally required to provide a specific amount of timber to companies. The DOJ also writes in the motion that the timber sale objectives in its latest management plan are aspirational goals, not binding commitments that can be challenged in court. And the plaintiffs don't point to a specific agency action or rule that has been violated. But Garrison says that the management plan gave timber companies an expectation that they would have roughly 15 years to transition business from old growth to new growth and provided estimated amounts of old growth timber that they could expect to buy.
The timber industry, including our clients, relied on the management plan, you know, when they were figuring out how they were going to run their business for the next decade.
Garrison says the Forest Service abandoned its commitment to a slow transition when it proposed to end old-growth logging in 2021. The Forest Service has not met its annual target for timber sales in Alaska in a decade, according to a federal report published last year. Nonprofit environmental law firm Earth Justice is representing a group that seeks to intervene in the case. It includes two tribes, a boat tour company, a fishermen's association, and environmental groups. Attorney Kate Glover agrees with the DOJ that the case should be thrown out because the industry hasn't challenged a specific agency action. Instead, she says timber companies are looking for a wholesale policy change.
The timber industry plaintiffs are asking the court essentially to order the region to take a step backwards, to go back to a long gone era of large timber sales, large clear cuts, where we make that the priority for the use of the old growth forests.
Joel Jackson is president of the Organized Village of Cake, a tribe based on Kupernov Island that's represented by Earth Justice. He says the forest's health is vital to the health of salmon, and since heavy logging moved out, the tribe's food security has improved. Jackson does not want to see old-growth logging scale back up. Instead, he wants the old growth to be preserved for future generations to experience it as he has.
It's like walking into one of the most beautiful cathedrals you could ever walk into anywhere in the world.
The tourism industry brings in significantly more money to Southeast Alaska than the timber industry. Jackson says the two are at odds because visitors come to see one of the last protected temperate rainforests in the world, not clear-cut logging in the mountains. Maggie Rabb is the executive director of the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council, one of the environmental groups trying to intervene in the case. She says the timber industry's demands are out of line with what most Southeast Alaskans want for the Tongass.
They want nuanced, science-based, responsive management, and that does not look like one logging company telling the Forest Service how much they need and letting that drive decisions about how we manage our forests.
The USDA, DOJ, and Forest Service declined to comment. The timber industry must file a response to the DOJ's motion to dismiss this case by June 24. In Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon.
And an appeals court has ruled that the board that regulates subsistence hunting on federal lands within Alaska acted legally when it created an emergency hunt for a Southeast Alaska village during the COVID-19 pandemic emergency, according to the Alaska Beacon. The order issued Monday is the latest chapter of a 5-year-old legal dispute stemming from a hunt authorized by the Federal Subsistence Board because the emergency in 2020 disrupted the normal food supply for the Southeast Alaska village of Cake. The emergency hunt resulted in the harvest of 2 moose and 5 deer, which were distributed to local residents. The state of Alaska later sued the board, arguing that approving the emergency hunt was beyond its authority and that the board acted inappropriately by delegating the hunt's administration to the Cake tribe. The organized village of Cake joined the lawsuit on the side of the Federal Subsistence Board. The Court of Appeals decisions are considered final unless appealed to a higher court, such as the U.S. Supreme Court. The decision by 3 circuit judges could also be appealed to the entire Ninth Circuit. The commissioner of the Alaska Department of Fish and Game said in an emailed statement that the department doesn't agree with the decision. Attorneys representing Cake said by email that the tribe is pleased with the results. And you are listening to Tongass Voices, perspectives from the homelands of the Occoquan and beyond. The Alaska State Museum in Juneau houses a collection of tens of thousands of objects, from canoes and plants to the state's last publicly accessible theater organ. But how do you maintain all of those items? That's conservator Ellen Carley's job. In this episode of Tongass Voices, she gives a tour of her lab and talks about her latest project on understanding and preserving the state's collection of beadwork.
I could actually talk about what's in this lab for hours on end. As we go past here, I've got these pH strips. They measure the alkalinity or acidity of surfaces. You just get these damp and you press it gently to the surface. And in that way, we're able to understand if we've got crizzling on the beads, which is a deterioration phenomenon. So we've been sharing and teaching that technique to kind of our study group. I'm Ellen Carley. I'm the conservator here at the Alaska State Museum in Juneau. And my job at the museum is to know what everything is made out of and how it deteriorates over time and how to make it last for as many generations as I can. Conservator, like a museum conservator, is a strange profession that people don't find themselves familiar with. I think there might be a grand total of 5 people in all of Alaska who have that job. And it's really a combination of art and science. So my training background is in chemistry, art history, studio art, anthropology. Our culture, my Euro-American culture, does not typically mix art and science. But it is really, for some of us that are built that way, it is a really rewarding career. Here we are in the Alaska State Museum Objects Conservation Lab. There's a window into the lab right off the atrium that the eagle tree is in, so you can peek into the lab. And I usually keep a table in front of this window that has kind of our latest, greatest projects and collaboration. Right now, the window into the lab has some of our bead study group collaboration. We're doing a survey of the glass beadwork in the collection and monthly study groups with beaders and culture bearers about what the beaded items are and how to preserve them. And probably in the coming years, we'll have a bead exhibit that might hopefully be co-curated by some of those participants. So if we're going to make things last for future generations, we have to know how they're deteriorating and what our role in having them deteriorate is. For example, up until very recently, until I had a bead worker as an intern a couple of years ago, I didn't realize that glass beads could fade, and particularly pinks and purples fade. So our previous advice had been that glass colorants are very stable, and if you put them on exhibit, you don't have to worry too much about the light levels. But now we know if you put glass beads on exhibit, particularly if they have pinks and purples from a certain historical period, you better be careful about the light levels because you could fade those pinks and purples. And then what the artist had intended things to look like won't be as obvious. Museums know about certain kinds of deterioration mechanisms with glass, but bead artists know things that museums don't about what's going wrong with beads in contemporary beads. Like certain beads have coatings and dyes and they could fade. That's what we have up in the window there. We have some beads hanging in the window for trying to make them fade on purpose. And we have little vials of solvents to kind of show how some of the beads are not as stable as we might think glass might be. So we're learning that from the beaders and the bead workers. So it used to be in museums that the museum staff was the authority. You know, we went to school, we had these elaborate degrees, and we would be the deciders and the authority. And nowadays, that's changing, and it's changing fast. And I think the Alaska State Museum is doing a good job at realizing that all of us are smarter than any of us, and these collections belong to Alaskans. And there are experts in the Alaskan community who know a lot more than we do about these materials. So bringing in the culture bearers, the materials experts, the artists, the folks to whom these collections matter the most, and collaboratively together looking at museum collections and deciding how best to care for them for the future is kind of the wave of the future.
That was Ellen Carley, the Alaska State Museum conservator. Carley is working on several projects at the museum, including a long-term collaboration with beaders in Alaska. She hopes to curate an exhibit on Alaska beadwork in future years. This is KTIO.